My name is Cherokee Shaney.
That's why I fight the fight every single day, is to leave the world a better place for my kids. Now that President Trump has taken the Oval Office, I'm really excited to be working in this new era. We have courage. We stand strong in our values.
It is time for us to fight, fight, fight.
Hello and happy Friday, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of It's Now the Darcy Show. Previously, the Friday spot here was with Chuck and Julie, but I have the honor of having taken over recently. Really, you who don't know, Chuck and Julie's son had gotten really busy golf, which is just amazing. So it just worked out that I took over this slot. And hey, I love nothing more than running my mouth. So it fit perfectly. So today we have a really special guest. He's somebody that I've worked with over the years. And we'll dive more into that once he's on. Rich Guggenheim, who's the legislative director for Gays Against Groomers. He has done amazing, amazing work for our kids in Colorado. He's been recognized by President Trump numerous times, and he is the author of the new book, Escaping the Rainbow Plantation. I encourage you guys to pick this up. Rich, again, has done so much work. He's one of the only people in our state, I feel, that, you know, sets aside his personal life, never asks for anything in return. And he is just out there on the front lines day after day. Rich Guggenheim, if you want to go ahead and bring Rich in. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Darcy. Good to be with you again.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
So it's been a really crazy year for you. Let's just dive right into it. So what are you working on right now?
Well, I actually have an update. I did step away from Gays Against Groomers because I have been working on this book, and this book has actually taken a lot of time to put together. And I don't think I could have said some of the things that I said in the book while still being part of Gays Against Groomers. And I also stepped away from it because I, along with two other gay men, have started a PAC. And that PAC is called America First Mayors.
Oh.
And you may remember when I had my very brief run for CD6 against Jason Crow. There was a lot of things that I learned during that process. And one of the other guys that we founded this PAC with also ran for office. And we learned a lot of things in our experiences. And so we decided that we wanted to help candidates in the America First world get elected. And sometimes the best way to start out is to remember that all politics are local politics. And we can see, if we look around us, the disaster that some of these mayors can have on the cities that they are destroying. I mean, all we have to do is look right here at Denver. But we can look at cities like Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, and understand how important it is that we focus on electing people who are going to put America first as mayors.
So is this just Colorado or is it nationwide?
We're going to do it nationwide, but part
awesome.
Of this that we're working on is also to create training and a pipeline for people to win higher office. So there's not a lot of training, and a lot of times it can be really difficult when you're new and you're just passionate like I was and you care about these issues to try and navigate running either for a state legislative office or to run for a federal office. And there's so much to it. Campaigning,
yeah.
Finance, you got to learn how to file paperwork and do it correctly and on time. And you got to learn how to ask for money, and you got to learn how to market and message and recruit for volunteers. And so all
something
of these,
that so many people struggle with.
Right. And so there's not a lot of information out there on how to do those things. So we decided the best way to do it is to do it ourselves and to take the lessons that we learned during our own campaigns to help other people win. And it's
that's awesome.
It might just be that we're asking people to run for city council and run to become a mayor, but the idea is we're taking a play from the Democrats' own book, and we're saying start out small, start out local, and then work your way up.
So what made you hone in on mayors rather than city council people or school boards or what have you? Like, what was it that drew you to the mayoral office? As far as we all know, I mean, you and I have for years talked about how important local politics are. So what made you hone in on that office?
It really was living in downtown Denver and seeing what an absolute dumpster fire our city has become. Living downtown, I saw the drug problem. I saw the crime problem. I've seen the impact that it has taken on businesses. I even talked to owners of gay bars in Denver, and they've talked about the fees and the taxes and the crime and the lack of parking and some of these great infrastructure projects that we talked about, how all of that has really hurt them. In fact, one of them I was talking to, and he made some statements. I was like, you better be careful. You're starting to sound like a Republican. So, I think when you have those dining room table conversations and you get things back down to what you understand in your own backyard, that's where we can really start affecting change.
Right. And it's people like you that help separate the making the change from the rhetoric that these people in Denver and, the gay community have been fed, because they have been fed this line from the media that, all Republicans are bad. It's not limited government. It's, blah, blah, we're all trying to hurt you and your businesses. And I'm hearing some of the same things you're hearing from, hairstylists to restaurant owners to what have you, that, okay, the tariffs actually made some sense. And, maybe limited government is not that bad. And I think that's a positive from all of this, is people are starting to see, look at the mayor, the candidate who's running for mayor in New York. I mean, that's insane. There's an actual communist running for office, and he is the nominee. So that is, I mean, astounding. You would have never seen this in the 80s, the 90s, the early 2000s. So you're right to go at this from a local perspective, because everybody's so focused on state. Am I right? Like state and federal.
It is. And the reality is, when you run at a local level, when you run for your city council, you have the ability to impact so many things. And in Colorado, a lot of our city council elections are not partisan elections. So
Yeah.
it's an opportunity for people to get out there and just really run on issues and talk about issues. And then not only that, you get that name recognition when you do that. And that's how you lead to success for higher office down the road. Once people in
Yeah.
maybe know you, a lot of your house districts, for example, are going to be a majority part of your city. So if you have live in a city and you run and you are a city council member or a mayor and you say later on, I'm going to run for house district, you already got that name recognition on top of the experience of how to get volunteers engaged, how to ask for donations, and how to message your campaign properly.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and how many mayors, or have we seen over the years that perhaps they run on a conservative ticket and then they get in office and they really struggle to vote conservatively and to stand for their constituents? And, in your mind, is that them rolling over, or is it a lack of education and a lack of resources and a lack of understanding what it even means
I
sometimes to vote?
really think that that is a big piece of it, is a lack of understanding. But I
Yeah.
also think that a lot of it has to do with people don't understand. From my perspective, I always go back to a very important question when I'm looking at things, and that is, what is the proper role of government?
Right.
And I think once we start to understand what the proper role of government is, and it really comes down to one of the most important things. I have one of these pocket constitutions. If you don't have one of these pocket constitutions, I strongly recommend that you get them. Go to your local congressman's office and just take them for free. That's one of the things that I always say. And while you're there, talk to them. But
Call Rich. He's got 100 of them.
I literally have a whole container full of them because I hand them out with my book. But I think when we understand the proper role of government and really protecting freedom and freedom versus force, when I tell the evangelical Christians, you've probably seen me say this, the same thing that I tell the trans activists and the vegans. You're free to believe whatever you want to believe in, but you aren't free to force those values onto other people. And that's where you start having the government tell you how you have to live your life and regulating every aspect of it. That's not a thing that anybody should ever tolerate. That's not a conservative principle.
And that's why, you and I have talked about for years, it's like the trans community is being used by big government to silence people, because it's okay if you don't go along with this speech, if you don't go along with this bathroom policy, if you don't do A, B, and C, you're a bigot, you're anti-American, you don't fit into this society, you're a horrible person. And so that is what, we people like you and I have had to fight so hard. And so when you talk about offices like mayor, like city council, but let's just take mayor for a second. I've seen so many mayors where it's hard for them. Like the local library, for example, brought a resolution to the Monument City Council 2 years ago and said, hey, we want you to issue this proclamation, right? And the mayor looks at it and the city council look at it and they say, oh, no harm. It's just saying we like diverse populations. Well, it was a DEI proclamation. And did that mayor know exactly what he was reading and signing, or did he just not want to go against the narrative? Probably a little bit of both. But,
I would say so.
we're now in a position where our localities have to stand up and fight. They're the ones that have to be fight. I mean, they're the closest ones to our parents, our children. And so if mayors are not behaving conservatively, their residents suffer more than if the US congressman is not behaving conservatively.
That's exactly right. And I think that goes back to also the understanding the proper role of government, because you have what is under the federal purview, and then you have state purview and then purview. And when we start talking about some of the things that we're seeing happening at the local level, as far as our children happen, it's the local city council and the mayors who are saying yes to the drag queen story time at the library. It's them saying yes to having drag shows in front of children at the city parks and making that available for. It's them saying if you protest against the pride at a public venue like the county fairgrounds or a city park, you're going to get arrested. And that is a violation of our First Amendment rights. And so those types of things are all under the purview of the mayor and the city council. And that's why, if we want to protect our communities, it starts with literally the city council, with the mayor, and making sure that we're taking control of our communities by electing America First mayors.
And so let's go back to that, Rich, like the role of government. We know what it's not. It's not to trans your children in the schools. It's not to hide things from parents. But like overall, what's the role of government? What in your mind, what is the role of government?
The role of government is protecting freedom, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it's really simple when you understand that. And when you look at this ideology behind it, what are we doing to our children? When we're sterilizing and mutilating children, and when we're exposing children to sexually explicit content, we are depriving them of the opportunity, the freedom to grow up with their innocence intact and live adult lives that are happy, healthy, and productive.
And so that is not the role of government. I mean, it's just not. So when the well, trans and kids obviously. So when we're talking about a school, so you have gone into some of the schools, you've worked with the schools where they're clearly overstepping the role of government, and they say, you know what, we don't want to tell the parents that this child wants to transition because we don't want the parents to come down on the child, or we don't want A, B, C, and D to happen. That's not their role. That is not the role of government. So how do we get, as a nation, as a state, like how do we move back away from that? Because it seems like a lot of people across the country have become content to say that it is the role of government. How do you get away from that? How do we get here and how do we get back?
I think the one way we get back is understanding that all of this is an assault on the foundation of society. And I talk about in my book, literally, this war on gender ideology is an assault on the foundation of society, which is the family. And so the first thing that we have to do is start strengthening our families. And I've had this conversation before where the whole thing is about removing, they call it toxic masculinity. So we want to make masculinity and men bad. And what is one of the things that we see again and again and again throughout all of this is that removal of the father figure from the household, or the masculine aspect is bad. So then everything becomes emasculated, and then you lose the strength of the man, you lose the strength of the father. And that's where we see the destruction of family. And we see that when we talk about crime statistics among Black communities. One common factor is the fact that there is not a father figure present. And then you see that when you talk about abortion rates and they're targeting single mothers with abortions. And then, ironically enough, when you talk about abortions, who's the largest provider of abortions? Planned Parenthood. Who's the largest provider of gender-affirming care for children in the United States? Planned Parenthood. And so when we start talking about
Right.
these types of things, it really
Exactly.
is about strengthening the family, but particularly by making sure that there is a strong father figure there to protect the family and have that there in place and protecting that. So there's that. And I think that's why you have heard me say this so many times while I'm at school boards or testifying at the Capitol or across the country. We need the fathers to get involved. And I've seen this happen where trans activists will try to intimidate and harass women. I've seen it with Eli Bazan,
All the time.
Patrol. He will bully women, but the moment a man steps in and steps up, they back down.
Right. Because they don't know what to do in that situation. And how many conversations have you and I and Christy Davis and everybody had about where are the men? And the men have been, slowly being demasculinized. They're backing down. I mean, it's school board meetings, everything. You largely see moms. You don't see a lot of dads. I mean, masculinity has gone by the wayside, and that's a whole separate issue, but it's everything. It's so, we talk about this in sort of like a loose context sometimes. CNN called me crazy when I was on and talked about it, but you hit the nail on the head with the Planned Parenthood, transing, and the abortion. This is all about breaking down the nuclear family. You're huge on talking about fathers. A father being present in the household is the single greatest predictor of whether a child will go on to become a criminal or not. I mean, think about how astounding that statistic is. So why would anybody with the best intentions for our children and for our nation not want to encourage the nuclear family?
That's why they target it, and that's why they want to break it down. And when you talk about the schools and the conversation that we go back to with that, I remember when we were having the debate on House Bill 24-1039, and that was about making sure that schools were keeping certain information from parents, particularly surrounding social transitioning and names. It was a non-legal name change, is what they titled the bill. But we also know how dangerous that is because when a child is allowed to socially transition, it's something close to 80% of them will go on to medically transitioning. And in Colorado, we know about the laws that are passed where a child can have access to these medical procedures and that they don't even need parental consent for it. Or sometimes the parents have no idea that this is going on. And so there's the argument was made by a former representative from Durango that, she would do anything and she used to be a school teacher. And she said, I'm going to do all I can to protect my students. And the reality is that if a child comes out to their parent, the parent's going to abuse their child. And I remember listening to that statement being made. And I thought, okay, there's two issues that I have with that. One, this is made by a school teacher who it was a school teacher who made the statement. School teachers are mandated reporters. So, if this type of thing is happening before that law was passed, if it was happening, those mandated reporters would have been mandated to report that. So, we would have had data to point to show that this is happening. but it's not happening, and there's no data to prove that it's happening and back up that claim. And so either it's a false accusation, the claim itself is a lie, or these teachers are failing to do their job as a mandated reporter.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, that you can't have it both ways. And I say this in every school district, and then they throw that tired old phrase out, like, I'd rather have a we our school district would rather have an alive trans woman than a dead boy. And it's like, where do you even, I mean, that's just such emotional garbage
That's
because
all it
it, the
is.
statistics.
It's
God.
emotional manipulation and gaslighting. And that gaslighting and emotional manipulation, we need to start calling it what it is. It is bullying. And so in this case, the lies
It's total,
told.
but we 100% do.
Yep, it's totally bullying. And so when you see these teachers and the school board advocacy that happened, by the way, if no one, if you're not aware of the biggest proponents pushing this type of legislation, it's Don Fritz and the Colorado PTA and the Colorado Educators Association are some of the biggest dollars and
Yeah.
voices behind this type of stuff. And what it does is it drives a wedge between a child and their parents. And so that
Yeah.
is literally a tactic of a predator to separate the prey from the protection of the herd. And so they
It's
separate.
what Mao did.
It's what they're trying to do, literally. And so that is how then the predator, in this case, the teacher and the school and these guidance counselors, are able to set that child down onto the pathway of getting the social transitioning and the gender affirming care by making the parent the bad guy. And that is undermining, again, the foundation of society, which is the family.
Exactly. I mean, and this has been going on under our noses for a long time, but we really started to see it during COVID. Now, I'm sure you've heard, you remember Cleve Simpson's opponent, Vivian, because you were all over that.
Yes.
But did you saw how Vivian and her his, whatever the husband, I don't know what they're married to.
I talk about that in my book, actually. It's in the
Okay,
book.
so they have a child in the house.
Yes, Cindy Stein's the mother, and I share Cindy's story about this, how her daughter was groomed by this teacher in Durango. And a lot, for those who don't know, Durango is a pretty rural part of southwestern Colorado. It's where I'm from. And Durango used to be kind of like this cowboy and rancher. Very conservative. We carried our guns and we rode the horses, right? That's how Durango was when I grew up. But now we literally have a groomer in the classroom. And this teenager in high school was groomed by this teacher, the husband of the teacher. By the way, they're both men. It identifies as a woman. That's Vivian Smotherman, and she ran for a state office and thankfully lost. But that is what's ha this girl ran away to live with this parent. And so now this teacher moves from being not only a groomer, but being a human trafficker.
Yeah. And
And
I, go ahead.
when the parent, when Cindy called the police about this and reported a child a runaway, the school district then reported the mother to Child Protection Services. And law enforcement literally laughed at Cindy and told her that there was nothing we can do about it. And so that's where we're at. And this child wound up going to a shelter for runaway children up in the Mesa County area, and then was later released without the mom's knowledge to the Smothermans again. And so this is what we're up against as parents here. And this is why I say in my book, this is an assault on the foundation of society.
Yeah, and like you just said, which I really like the word, the phraseology. I mean, you call it bullying. It is bullying. Like back when Vivian first announced that he was running for office, I was very clear in calling him a groomer because he it there's things on Twitter that he even himself has posted, talking about sex with children and all kinds of just weird, his demeanor's weird. Like it's I'm on a mountain and I'm talking about how I'm trans and that's why I should be the next state rep. And so I felt it appropriate to call him out. And then I don't know if you remember, but the media was just everywhere. They were like, she was so hard on Vivian and this was so anti-trans. Well, now fast forward 6 months. Okay, is he a groomer? Media, Kyle Clark, is he a groomer? Because it seems to me like he is.
Well, and that's what the other piece of this is. I talk about five pillars of society. So I talk about the foundation, and then I talk about five pillars. And if you look at my book, I was kind of going off of this plantation, right? And the pillars are what hold our society up. And those five pillars are science, first and foremost. I mean, we're literally being told by science that trans women are women and that gender is gender, right? Like gender, in my opinion, is just a completely made up social construct. And I do go into this in the back in the book. I talk about what are the origins of gender, and I talk about John Money, and I talk about where its origins come from, so that people actually understand that this is a social construct and that it was born out of postmodern thought. And so, I talk about how it's corrupted the pillar of science. I talk about how it's corrupted the pillar of academia. And I break that into two parts. We got to understand the higher education. Our universities and our colleges are teaching the teachers and the school administrators about gender ideology and queer theory. And then they and DEI, and they're taking all of that stuff, social emotional learning, it's all packaged together. And it used to be just in our college of education, but now it's in everything, it's pervasive. And those are the people that are graduating and they're going to teach our children. And so we have it in K through 12. And in Colorado, I don't think a lot of people are aware of the fact that it is now state mandated to teach children at the age of six about gender ideology and who people like Marsha P. Johnson are. And so they're literally indoctrinating our children at the age of six. And so that's the academia piece of it. I talk about medicine and I go into great detail about how our medicine has been compromised and how the medical industrial complex is targeting children with puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries. And I expose how the Biden administration had approached WPATH, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. And the Biden administration lobbied WPATH to remove age restrictions on puberty blockers for children. Currently, the guidance under WPATH is Tanner Stage 2. So 9 to 10, 8 years old if you're a girl, to start puberty blockers. He wanted that removed so that they could start putting a child at any age on puberty blockers. And so I talk about some of those types of things. So it's compromised medicine, it's compromised media. And I literally call out people like Kyle Clark in my book and the mainstream media, because if you don't go along with the narrative, they are going to try to smear you. I show, going back to the case of the mom in Durango, right after the story came out in the Daily Caller, I believe, was it the Daily Caller or the Daily Wire? It was one of those
I
big
think wire.
Wire did the story, and then it was the Durango Herald right after that did a whole hit piece on this mom who literally had her child taken from her by this groomer, Durango, and
That's
how
what
law
they
enforcement
do.
didn't do anything. Child protection services did not do anything. The school did not do anything. And they paint the mother as the villain and all of, and they've done it to me, they've done it to you, and they'll do it to anybody who isn't willing to go along with the agenda and the narrative. And so I talk about media. And then the last one that I talk about is I talk about how it's corrupted government. And when you start looking at how our state government and under the Biden administration, even the federal government, was complicit in pushing this ideology. I mean, when you have President Biden in the White House sitting down with Dylan Mulvaney and talking about how what a wonderful thing it is that we are mutilating and sterilizing
Oh.
children, there's a problem.
Well, and it's and even if you okay, so like even if you, which you can't, but even if you could pull out the children piece from this, you know, when we're talking about Biden and everybody else, take it back a step, because what was Biden really glorifying when he sat down with Dylan Mulvaney. He's glorifying a fetish, right? It's the president sitting down and commending somebody on their fetish. And we didn't see that 20 years ago. We didn't see government entities being like, you know what? I'm really glad that these people like to have threesomes, or these people like to use sex toys, or whatever. I mean, that was supposed to be what happens in your bedroom stays in your bedroom. Like,
Right.
that's great. Whatever you like, you like. I hope you get a lot of it, and I hope you have a happy life. But like, this is our gynophilia. This is a fetish.
Is. And that's exactly what it is. And the whole root of this, and I talk about in my book that gender ideology hijacked the gay and re gay rights movement. And when you look at the foundation of the trans rights movement, it is built on, first of all and foremost, misogyny. And fundamentally misogynist. And then the next piece of it I talk about is how it's very homophobic. And that's because women's rights and the rights for gays and lesbians are predicated upon the understanding of biological sex. So whether you agree with homosexuality, you at least understand the concept of it, that it is a person that is attracted to the same sex. And so when you start throwing in the transgender ideology, now suddenly we're erasing protections. And when you open up the door to discrimination based on sex under the guise of inclusivity, you really undermine everything that we fought for the last 100+ years to achieve.
You mean you as the gay community or women?
Both.
Exactly.
And that's
Well,
exactly what I talked about, is how the trans queer rights movement has appropriated women's rights for equal rights. And you can see this in the flag. There's a reason that the book has this flag on it and not just a normal rainbow flag. That flag
exactly.
represents the progress. Pride flag has black and brown in it because the trans queer community has appropriated the fight for equal rights and social justice by people of color. It has the pink and the blue on there, and then you've also got the rainbow color. We've appropriated the fight for, they appropriated the fight for women. They've appropriated the fight for gays and lesbians, and they're completely erasing these histories. And now what they're doing is they're even throwing intersex in there, and that intersex, I have to remind them, is a rare medical condition. And these people are very ableist. It's extremely ableist to appropriate that and use people with a medical condition to turn it into a political ideology and fight for something that, quite frankly, there's no rights that they don't have. They just have
No.
privileges.
That's exactly the problem. And that's why, you know, when I talk about trans people, I now refer to them as Transtifa, because they have become like an army that, you know, they're being used by the government, and then they're simultaneously using the government and using the media and trying to bully all of us. And it's like, I mean, I see these men that are like huge, huge men. They're clearly men. And they're online and they're posting, you know, I want more rights. Like, trans rights are everything. And we're so abused. And, you know, I'm going to take up arms. What do you not have? Because it seems like the only person in who's lost anything by way of the trans rights movement is women and you gays. Because, you know, you. And I'm okay to, he's my best friend, so I'll just Garrett. You know, we talk about this all the time. Garrett Flicker, who's on PPFs or PPFC, he serves on all the gun organizations, he's with Log Cabin. He's like, I'm a gay man and I just want to love my boyfriend and go home and have a normal life and not be used as a political weapon. And the trans movement has hijacked everything that we stood for and we fought for so long, which is, you know, gay people are human beings just like anybody else. They just have a different sexual preference. That's not the case for the trans community. It's
But
not.
unfortunately, what I say, I always talk about the fight for gays and lesbians was a fight for liberation. We just wanted the same freedoms that every other American had. We wanted to be able to serve openly in the military. That's why we fought against Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We wanted to be able to get married to the people that we love so that we could have. And my, personally, again, if we go back to what is the proper role of government, my personal take, a hot take that everybody seems to fire on me for saying, but I don't believe the government should be in the business of regulating and licensing marriage for anyone. I think that it should go back to being a religious right. If you do genealogy, you go back 100 or 200 years and you're looking at the church records, the synagogue records, and those were where you found the vital statistics for your ancestors. It wasn't at the county courthouse.
No. I mean, do you think that there's any hope, like in the coming years, of the gay community, the lesbian community, the bi community, just saying, we don't recognize these people? Like, they've hijacked what was once something that was awesome. Like, I remember, it was probably 2018. I remember watching like this big pride parade in LA, and LA has always been kind of gross, but it was before it went, totally foul, I guess. And my brother lives in LA, and he's gay. And I remember looking at certain pictures and looking at certain things that were going on. And I, as the sister of a homosexual man, I actually felt pride for the fact that my brother, over the years, the things that he had fought for, and the fact that, he could live a normal life. Because I remember growing up in grade school, and I'm sorry to be emotional, but I remember knowing that my brother was gay very early on. And I probably, shouldn't delve too far into that, but I remember thinking, it's not that I didn't want him to be, right? It's not that I was like, I don't want my brother to be. My dad and I had this discussion, and I remember articulating this, said I didn't want him to have a harder life. I didn't want him to have to go through some of the things that people in that community go through. And so when people like the trans community come along and they take that away, and they make people like my brother and you look like you're part of this crazy thing, it's like it's so unfair.
That is what the problem is. And when I look at the other piece of it, Darcy, for me, I say I just wanted the right to be able to love the person I love, go to work and come home and not worry about, am I going to lose my job if I'm outed? And am I going to get kicked out of my housing if I'm outed? Because I'm not going to fight in the
Right.
military. I'm too old for that stuff now. But at the end of the day, those are the kind of freedoms that I wanted. I mean, it's an opportunity and it's a right. I believe it's a privilege and a blessing in the United States to be able to work and pay taxes and do those things that responsible adults do. Like, I don't like paying tax. I don't like giving my government all this money. But at the end of the day, where else do we have the privilege to be able to go to work? I look at these people that are so dependent on the government and I look at them and I'm like, if you rely on the government for your substance, you're not truly free.
No, you're not. I mean,
And
and I don't think any of these people are truly free because
no,
they're relying on a movement to for who they are, like
that's
their
what this
whole
book talks
identity.
about. We fought for liberation, and what's happened now is these people have become slaves to an ideology.
They're
And
slaves.
the slave masters on this plantation are their overlords, are people like One Colorado, the Human Rights Campaign, PFLAG. And these people are being exploited and they have been commodified. And you look at Pride and you look at the corporate sponsorships of Pride, and what is that? It's nothing but a tax write-off. And when you look at governments, I said this last Pride season, it's not just a month. It feels like it's all year long now.
Yeah.
But when you have governments, every level from around the world sponsoring proclamations and declaring Pride and all of this stuff, and hanging the rainbow flag up over the city hall or the state capitol. And when you have corporations, multinational corporations, celebrating your sexuality for an entire month, you are not oppressed, you are privileged.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I want to be that privilege. Like, do I get my own bathrooms, my own parade? Like, I guess when I get a boyfriend, he and I should just like parade down the street naked together. Like, I don't,
Buy
this is
yourself
not,
through, pierce your septum, and call yourself queer, and
that
voila.
sounds great. That sounds perfect. Hey, Rich, we've got Jordan on now too. Jordan Scott, he's been working on exposing what's going on in Manitou with all the craziness and all they've got minors down there dancing for adults and all the things. Jordan, just jump on whenever you're ready. I see your screen, but I don't hear you yet, so I'm not sure. Can you hear me? Okay. Well, we're waiting for you, Jordan, whenever you're ready to jump on. But I mean, that's another example of what's going on in Manitou and Colorado Springs. You've got adults that are like, well, what's wrong with kids performing drag? I'm sorry, wait, what? Like, what? Because here's the thing, Rich, let's be honest. Hey, Jordan, jump on whenever you're ready. Jump on. If you guys can bring Jordan on. There you go. Hey, Jordan. So, hey, thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we were just discussing all the work that Rich has been doing in his book and everything we're seeing across the state of Colorado. So what I was gonna just say, so Jordan has been working on, he's an investigative journalist. He's been working hard in Manitou to uncover the kids' drag shows. What if I was like, I mean, I wouldn't do this because I'm not gross, but like say that I would. If I was like, you know what, my 9-year-old daughter, she should go dance on a stripper pole. I would be put in jail. But if I said my 9-year-old son wants to go dance and be trans in front of a bunch of adults, it would be celebrated by the community.
Maybe, but
Yeah.
so the problem is, Darcy, is what they're doing is they're taking an aspect of gay culture, the nightlife specifically, and they're trying to sanitize it so that it can be appropriated by, no offense, woke white women, literally,
No,
excuse
none
me.
taken.
So they're doing this. It's literally the liberal white women that I see doing this again and again and again. And I look at these white women that are taking their children to it, and they come to these events with their children to see a sanitized version of gay culture. You know what else I would like to point out? It was the white people throughout history who like to sanitize other people's cultures and then colonize their land. And now we're seeing it again. It's these white people who are colonizing gay spaces, gay pride. And it's they're taking their children. And is it appropriate? Is it appropriate for them to do that? And I would just frame it differently. Take out the gay part of it. Take out pride ask
Exactly.
aspect of it. Ask yourself, would it be okay for you to do the same thing to a Cinco de Mayo, to the Hispanic community? Would you do the same thing to the Asian community? Would you do the same thing to the African American community? And if the answer is no to any one of those, why then are you okay sanitizing, appropriating, and colonizing gay culture and gay spaces? It's
Exactly.
not appropriate to take your children to these things. And whether or not you agree with it from the approach, I, again, going back to freedom and liberty, we're robbing these children of their innocence.
Yeah. And
Should
it's
not
mostly mothers,
Yes,
right?
it is.
It's most, Jordan,
Again,
you see mostly mothers.
where are the fathers?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say it's mostly mothers, and a lot of these kids are troubled kids. They're troubled youth. I believe that they recruit through places where trouble youth are maybe found. One
Yeah.
of the places that we know of in particular is the Inside Out Youth Services Queer Youth Prom. That's where we learned of 14-year-old, the 14-year-old that was put on stage with the blow-up doll, is that at this queer youth prom, they met their quote-unquote drag mother. And I'm sure Rich could probably tell you a little bit more about how that works, maybe, but there's this whole grooming network, it seems like, to normalize this, make it this celebrated thing, and it replaces the family, you know, and brings in this new family.
And that's what we were j literally just talking about. I mean, it's so destructive. And like none of us have even seen, you know, in 20, 30 years, like what is going to be the outcome of children that were raised by like trans parents? Like they don't even have a concept of you are th these people are re kids are being raised in a household where fetishizing, like outwardly talking about your fetish is normal now. Where are
Yeah,
we going to
absolutely.
be?
But I
Yeah.
think one of the dangerous pieces of it, Darcy, and when I talk in chapter 7 about the whole aspect of education, and I talk about how they're teaching this to school children, right? And I talk about one of the things being is that they do this because they literally want to desensitize children to child predators. And when you do that, then it makes the child easy prey. And
They're grooming.
that's literally what they're doing. And they're, you know, this is where I talk about there's the warning piece of my book, but the roadmap piece of that. And I really hope one thing that people will take away is as a mother and as a father. And I talk about Aaron Lee's story in this book and January Littlejohn's story and all these stories that have come out. I share these stories, but one of the things that I will say about Aaron Lee's story and John's story with their daughter Chloe, they had built a relationship with their daughter so that her daughter was able eventually to have that conversation with mom and dad and say, look, I think I've made a mistake. I think I've done something wrong, and I can come to you and trust you and know that you're going to help guide me through this. So that's really what is a testament to Aaron and John's parenting skills. But
Yeah.
there's a model there. And if you, as a parent, have that relationship with your child and you build that relationship of trust and you have those conversations on a regular basis, then when that kind of situation happens, they can come to you and they can say, look, this is what's happening. And another story that I share indirectly is a story of Representative Bradley and her son at school when the Mona Lisa was being taught, and they were telling her son that the Mona Lisa was painted by Leonardo da Vinci and he was
Oh,
non-binary. And
yeah.
they know that is because this is him as a woman. It's like, well, this is just, where's the evidence of that? There isn't. You're just making stuff up. And secondly, the fact that that son was able to come to his mom and have that relationship with mom and say, mom, I trust you enough to tell you about this, was so important. And so it goes back to the importance of parenting and building that strong family relationship at home. And it starts yesterday.
Yeah,
Waiting till
exactly.
it shows up at your door.
And I really do believe that a lot of this queer theory side of it is heavily tied to the Marxist message in way of that replacing of the family, and
Yeah.
that it takes a village to raise a community instead of the individual family, parental rights, the right of the individual. And yeah, that's what we're seeing, is that it heavily aligns with the Marxist message, to be able to come in and think that you have the authority because the state has given you such to say that, hey, this child's in an unsafe environment. And that's what's scary, is that I personally have found that these drop-in centers, these safe environments, are actually places they're saying they're hiding. Sounds like they're hiding kids away with armed security from non-affirming parents.
Yep.
And that's a scary thing. And to me, I wonder how we've gotten to this point.
By accepting more and more government, and by people like not standing up. I mean, even things as little as like, my kids were watching a movie last week that they found on Netflix, and it was a K-pop movie. So I walked in and I noticed there's like three trans boys on the stage in this movie. And I said to the kids, I said, I'm gonna pause this, and I said, you understand that this is not normal behavior? And they're like, yes, mom. And I said, okay, we're gonna turn it off. And they're like, okay, like, we just, and I'm like, so many parents just stand by and like they don't even know what to say or do right now. Like, now is the time to tell your kids we live in the best country there is. Like, how fortunate are we that the three of us can even be on a call discussing these things right now? In some countries we couldn't even do this. So like, while we might be frustrated at times, we still have the best country there's. It's just slipping away from us, and we have to put a stop to it. But like, every single day we have to fight, and we have to stand up for our kids, because not doing so, we see how we got here. This is how we got here, by men saying, I don't want to get called a bigot. Like, I don't want to get yelled at work. What's the alternative? Every time you say that, you're giving a piece of your country away, and your kids have to live in it.
Absolutely. And I would encourage people to speak out, because we might have some pretty gray laws on the books here, but I can tell you from what it seems like to me that a lot of these things are starting to skate along the lines of the definitions of lewd behavior and decency, if they haven't already met them. And it's up to the community to come out and say, hey, this is adult entertainment. We want it in an area zoned as such. This is what this is. People like Gag, saying this is not normal behavior. It takes everybody doing their part, and it just seems like that's not happening for the most part. So.
I think we have to also understand that a lot of this stuff has been around for a lot longer than we realize. And when you understand the postmodernism that is the root of all of this, that's been around for 60 or 70 years. And gender ideology really got its foothold with people like Judith Butler and Michel Foucault back in the 80s and the 90s. And when
Yeah.
you start to understand that this has been something that has been slowly growing over the last 40 or 50 years, and we're just now becoming aware of this. I said this to somebody the other day. I was talking to somebody in the Trump administration, and I said, this is not something that is going to go away in the next year or
No.
5 years. This is something that took 50 years to get to where it's at, and it's going to take 50 years to undo all of the damage. And one of the most important things that I would say is the children. We talk about the harm that's been done to children. And we're working on legislation to shut the pipeline down, but it's not doing anything to protect those who are already in the pipeline or who have gone through the pipeline. And one of the greatest things that we need to understand is that there are a whole lot of people who have been harmed by this. And the time is happening. We're seeing it more and more where they're coming out as detransitioners. And we have one up here in Greeley that I'm talking to, and they're sharing their stories, but they're seen as apostates by the gender cult. And they've been disowned by this community that once showered them with love. And they are now finding out that they have a ton of emotional trauma and physical trauma. And we need to be the people that will show them compassion and
Yeah.
love, and welcome them back into our communities and help them heal from that. We can't be the ones that are constantly berating them because they, I believe, were innocent victims who were duped and lied to by teachers, by social workers, by the medical industry, what I call the gender industrial complex.
Yeah.
They fell prey to that. And we need to make sure that we show love and compassion to them.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, these people were used and they've been abused by the gender complex. It's like the gender, if you look at, I get online a lot and I'll go on Reddit late at night when I'm bored and I read a lot of like detransitioning stories. And I mean, just physically, like the stories that these people are telling, that the medical associations, that the medical boards are they're stifling their stories. These surgeries aren't, they're not working. I mean, the men who are transitioning, they're coming back and they're like, I have to dilate 5 times a day. I have this wound and it's infected and it smells and nobody will come near me. And that's happening more and more and more. Well, of course it is. I mean, if I woke up tomorrow and said, I just want to cut a hole in my leg, it's not going to turn out well. I mean, there's biology and there's things that go against biology and these poor people, like I can't imagine physically what they're going through. Like it's heartbreaking.
It is.
I would definitely agree and say that, I've interviewed detransitioners. I've interviewed Chloe Cole briefly, and I'm even working with some people right now leaving some identities that they built for themselves. And it's one thing that I know to be a traumatic thing, because just in the interviews in general, I mean, you can see it. You can see how
Yeah.
traumatic it is. Like you said, they're talking about the wounds, but when I talk to these people behind the scenes, there is deep, deep trauma. Like Rich said, like these people have been lied to. The trauma is deep. They don't know who to trust. And you're right, Rich. I think that's so key. We have to embrace these people, show them true love, what it should look like, what the truth looks like, and the midst of all these lies, and that is very important. So I agree 100%.
It's just to keep telling the truth. And that's one thing I talk about in this book is we have to get out of this false dichotomy of you either speak the lie or you have to be silenced. You got to go along to get along. You don't. We have to stand up for truth. And one of the truths that I think is super important to understand is You cannot change your sex. And so these medical procedures have a 100% fail rate. It's just you literally
Yeah,
can't. You
right.
know,
You can't. I mean, go
that's where
ahead.
I think we have to hold these, we have to hold our government accountable, going back to kind of where we started from. We have to hold the government accountable, and we have to tell the government, and I've been back to DC so many times now, working with people on the Hill, and it is sometimes frustrating beyond belief to see how slow the process moves.
Yeah.
You have conversations, but the conversations feel like they go nowhere. And one of the things that we got to understand is, and this is why I wrote a bill to protect those who have been harmed by gender ideology and the medical practices that gives them the statute of limitations and the cause of action. But what we have to do, going back to all of this, is start these conversations. And when I talk in one of my chapters about Democrats, a majority of Democrats don't align with this also. And
Yeah.
so giving that voice back to the people to speak the truth and not being afraid by Trantifa and these crazy radical activists. In fact, Darcy, I don't know if you read it, but I dedicated this book to James O'Rourke. I don't know if you know who he is or
Oh
if you
yeah.
know him at the Colorado Times Recorder. He wrote
Awesome.
A hit piece on me, and it was about escaping the rainbow plantation when I coined that phrase on the Mandy Connell show. So this is where the book title came from. And I said to James O'Rourke and the trans rights and queer activists who inspire me every single day, we got to look at what they're doing and don't let them beat us up and take us down. Use it as inspiration to keep fighting and keep speaking the truth.
Exactly.
So true.
We can't, I mean, we can't allow these people to just beat us down because the people who suffer are our children. And thank you to you guys for all that you do. And somebody like me, who I've got a 9 and 10 year old, it's like it's so important that we keep fighting. Like, at some point we're not going to be on this earth anymore, so they have to live here. And if we leave it like a communist mess where nobody can say anything and everybody's just having weird sex out on the streets now, like what's left for our kids? Like, we can't live like that. So I'm really thankful for all that both of you do. Please follow Jordan Scott on Twitter, Rich Guggenheim, Escaping the Rainbow Plantation. Pick up a copy of his book. Rich, I will pick up a copy as soon as we hang up this call. I've seen excerpts of it, but I haven't bought a book yet. It'll be the first book I've bought in probably 30 years, to be honest. But thank you both so much for being here, and we'll get you both back on soon. I hope everyone has a great weekend. On that note, just remember, don't let the left silence you. Say what you want to say. That's what makes our country great, right, guys?
Yes, amen. Amen. God bless y'all for what you're doing. We'll
Have a
see
good weekend, everyone.
you.
You
Bye.
too. Thanks,
Bye.
guys.
Thanks.